Jeff.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert and noted author. Find his books over at Next Chapter Books. Make fantastic Valentine's Day gift, kids. Trust me, she'll swoon if you give her a Jeff Stein book. Also, totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Business Report is his daily show he does down there, and KXEL is where you find his Iowa Politics Report. Hi, Jeff.
Well, that was rather sexist of you.
Well, they'll swoon. Well, I mean,
no, no. You said she'll swoon. Well, why can't women buy gifts and have the male swoon?
You're absolutely correct. Or your partner will swoon.
Exactly.
Even better. More inclusive.
Gift recipient. Yes, the gift recipient will swoon. And, you know, what the heck? Buy two copies.
Boy, this erotic talk on AM 950 is a little out of hand. Boy, oh boy, we'll swoon over you.
We got to have you and Jeff record like a really sexy ad. We'll have like a Barry White effect on it. Yeah,
it's white chocolate. Here it is. No, I'm not going to do that. No,
it's you not, already did. Yeah. You just did. We're already in trouble.
Oh well, it's. I'm not exactly the romance expert, but I know your books will make everyone's partner swoon.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
All right, that's a little better. I don't know if what I'm going to do will work. Let's find out.
Oh, yeah.
For sale.
Come get the books.
Too much of anything.
Okay, that's probably enough.
If you're headed to the orgy, well, no, never mind. Make sure there's a bulk discount. So, you know. Sorry.
Can you imagine somebody getting in the car right now to come home? They're in the car. They're on their way to a diner, and they hear Barry White and you talking about a bulk discount.
For the orgy, yes.
Not good.
Well, I mean, they'll just, damn it, McNeil. That's what you'll hear. That's like crickets in this town right now. Damn it, McNeil. All right. So
everyone's out of the mood. There you go.
It's a Wednesday. You know, come on, get through the work week. All right. I want your opinion.
Okay.
Was it a good idea for the RNC to go on out there and imply the January 6th insurrectionists were just, you know, legitimate political discourse? Or was this a dumb idea? Because you're starting to see a larger and larger contingent of Republicans saying, what the hell are you doing?
Completely dumb idea.
Dumb.
Completely dumb idea for either political party in a given situation for what would be political reasons. This is going to get awkward. For political reasons to censure someone. Now, did the RNC, for example, censure a candidate who indicated that she was a witch? You remember that one?
Yeah, the Delaware Senate candidate. Yeah.
Okay. Did they in any way censure candidates because of comments that were made of racial, no.
Matt Gaetz. I mean, Matt Gaetz is a prime example. I don't believe he's been censured.
Well, no, this is the point. They don't censure anybody. It's one thing for something like a party's national committee to say, we have an incumbent president, and therefore we really don't want to have any opposition. I don't know that they should put their thumb on the scale to the degree that they did, frankly, in 2016, the RNC did, where they totally intertwined their organization with the Trump organization. Okay, I'm not sure that's appropriate either. But how in the world can you claim it's a fair nomination process, whether you're talking at the presidential level or at a congressional level anywhere, dog catcher? How can you claim it's a fair nomination process when the committee takes sides like that? And the other thing that is fascinating about it is the way that it was done was watered down. Did you see this reporting by Politico?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so it's David Bossie, and I trust the audience is familiar. Mr. Bossie, a Trump supporter, co-authored books with Corey Lewandowski, if that helps put a little more color on it. But he apparently was the one who wrote the thing And the phrase legitimate political discourse did not appear in the original draft of the resolution. Now, I'm reading from Politico. They're crediting the Washington Post, so I want to be fair about it. This is a Washington Post story. Bossie's version said the January 6th committee had a disregard for minority rights. I assume they mean political minority, and disregard for due process, and seemed intent on advancing a political agenda to buoy the Democrat Party's bleak electoral prospects. That was the original draft. They then edited it down to legitimate political discourse. It still did not get to any committee members until 1:38 a.m. Friday morning. They were supposed to vote on it before lunch. So this thing was really rammed through, but the question is, how did it get changed to the softer language? Because it was a complete political bomb otherwise, wasn't it?
It was actually pretty – it was much more incendiary. I mean, this is bad enough as it is, but it was basically saying, you know, we don't care. You know, we're just delusional basically. You know, and it brings up an interesting – McConnell's comments today on it. You know, okay, so the Republican game plan for 2022 is pretty easy to see. They want to go after for Biden on the economy, on coronavirus measures, and for crime. And one, the economy is starting to turn around. As a matter of fact, his numbers on the economy are going up and going up well. It looks like – I mean, are you hoping that if all of a sudden all the restrictions are lifted in March that people are still furious about it by November? I don't think that's going to work. And then, you know, in Minnesota here, we just had the Amir Locke shooting, which really took a lot of the wind out of the sails of the constant daily, oh, cops are angels. Now all of a sudden you have the no-knock warrant and he gets gunned down, legally carrying a gun in an apartment he was legally in, and he was not the subject of the search warrant. And so you have, you know, these things going blowing up. I mean, it's to a point, I think what you're seeing is the remnants of the old Republicans, basically, who have gone along with this far-right shift, basically standing up and saying, okay, I still have to go into a suburban district, which is a 55-45, and convince people to vote for me, and now you're basically forcing me to actually argue with you about whether 1-6 was an insurrection or was a picnic, because I don't remember too many picnics where people are whacking cops with hockey sticks. And so,
well, then you have not been to Mississippi.
Yeah. Well, it's St. Louis good times, but you know, but no, but I mean,
yeah, that broke out at a Blues game.
But I mean, you really do have this problem where the you know, they're the old traditional Republicans are trying to scream at this new far right entity, you can't do this and win elections. And whether or not they're listening remains to be seen.
Well, I actually wrote this for the Iowa Politics Report for tomorrow. That was not a blatant plug. It just happens to be a fact. And again, I was using the Politico reporting, pointing out that McConnell has taken a very different path from McCarthy. McConnell is the one pointing out that this was a dangerous insurrection. McConnell's the one who has not talked to Donald Trump since. McConnell's the one whose wife gave up her cabinet post, yes, a week early, but still resigned, okay, because of all of this. You had other GOP senators who were following their leader. Meanwhile, you got McCarthy, who goes to Mar-a-Lago regularly, who has banked on the fact that voters don't care about January 6th, and they just want to know, what have you done for gas prices, et cetera, et cetera. Focus on those issues. Okay, I get that, especially if 1-6 is not to your favor, you would like to not discuss it. But the point of it is, you got McConnell trying to get a majority in the Senate with his tactic. You got McCarthy trying to get a majority in the House with the exact opposite tactic. What happens if both are successful, in other words, both chambers flip to GOP, how in the world are they going to govern, and how in the world are they going to then try to get the presidency back in 2024? You know, I mean, what do they have in common? They want to win a majority. Okay, if they go about it in very different ways, I don't know, Matt, how you reconcile those two positions especially if you're a member of one chamber who has a different view than your leader.
Now, I to a point, I agree with you, because the Democrats can screw something up better than anyone I've ever seen. You know, the easy layup, they can somehow miss the entire backboard and break a leg at the same time. But at the same time, I want to one thing I will say is it's you know what McCarthy is doing. I mean, you look at the numbers. A third of Republicans feel as if what happened on 1-6 was wrong, and they do not agree with it. One third. Well, let's do the math. Pretty much all the Democrats think it was bad. Most of the independents think it was bad. If a third of the Republicans are there, McCarthy seems to have much more of that primary strategy where he's like, okay, we'll win with the red meat that's going to appeal to the masses, and then beg to hope that basically they can say, we never said that for the rest of the general election. Meanwhile, McConnell's already looking at the general election saying, hey, I already know the Republicans are going to, you know, vote for Republicans. Let's look at already the game plan for later. McConnell's just looking at it on a political scale. McConnell's is a much safer plan. McCarthy's is kind of dancing on the razor's edge. And if I'm going to expect one to work, I'd expect the Senate. And also understand, the Senate's in a much more precarious position. Democrats are more likely to hold that one or even pick up a seat there. Then the House seems to be a little bit easier for the Republicans. But still, I'm McCarthy. That is just a stupid plan, because at some point you're going to have to start running a general election campaign. And if a third of your own voters disagree with you, sure, it worked fine for the primary, but then you run into the buzzsaw.
Well, with regard to handicapping, until we know what all of the redistricting looks like, I'm not prepared to say who's got a better chance to win the House. Mm-hmm. More recently, we've been hearing that Democratic endorsed plans have been approved, and that to literally where it looks like the map is more favorable to Democrats in terms of retaining seats and lumping incumbents in together, have Republicans be together. So that point aside, yeah, you got to run the general election campaign, and you've got to hope that if you ignore January 6th, which is what McCarthy's trying to do,
yes,
you can then focus on COVID and inflation, et cetera. To your earlier point, if COVID's not a factor by November, nobody's going to care what happened in January. Nobody's going to care about any flip-flops on masks. Nobody's going to care about that if their kids are back in school full time, if they're reasonably healthy, if for some reason inflation, the Fed's actions to increase interest rates actually does slow the economy down so that inflation is lower. That's what we're going to vote on. Now to that point, McCarthy is saying, forget about the Washington stuff. Talk about kitchen table issues. Okay, that's great. But what you define, Matt, is exactly the distinction between the House and the Senate. The House is a more volatile body by nature because they are up for election every 2 years, every single one of them. The Senate is the more deliberative body. It's a third that's up every 2 years for those six-year terms. Obviously, McConnell's playing the long game. And McCarthy is playing the, I want to be Speaker of the House immediately, and I'll deal with the ramifications later. And that's what's fascinating is that, you know, the Republicans thought they had the world by the tail when they had Speaker Paul Ryan, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and Donald Trump as president. They thought, here comes the agenda. Well, the House and Senate couldn't get along then, and they supposedly were on the same page. Imagine if you've got this fundamental core distinction between the leadership of the two bodies.
I don't even want to think about the Romney family reunions at this point. One of the
you
things
you didn't want to before, though.
Yeah,
you
so totally didn't want who to likes 2% milk? No, okay. So you just brought something up, though, which I think is a very important thing. Kitchen table issues. The Democrats actually do have a window here for this reason. Let's look at the House candidates. What do the House candidates really want to do? A lot of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them. One, 2020 was robbed. Trump was robbed in 2020. 1-6 insurrectionists are political prisoners. They did nothing wrong. And as you said, I mean, if it's kitchen table issues, if the Democrats can come on as like, hey, did you have a big medical bill because of COVID? We want to try to fix that. We're working on getting the economy going back and working on that together. We're creating jobs. We've got the greatest jobs president in the history of the planet. So we've got these things going. If the Democrats focus on a very, not an exaggeration, a very just linear, you know, presentation of their plans, And the Republicans just constantly can't get away from Trump won in 2020 and 1-6 was nothing. Well, they're in big trouble because once you get to that general election, people do want those kitchen table issues.
You can focus on election integrity without making reference to Trump was robbed in 2020. They're different issues. And I think it's pretty clear. And again, I think McCarthy is following this path of saying, let's not talk about the RNC. Let's not talk about January 6th. Let's not talk about Trump 2020. Let's talk about how you are right now in 2022. And is this the path you want the country to go on? Now, that's what's going to be somewhat ironic. If, in fact, the potential future speaker says, let's focus on the future, let's focus on kitchen table issues, the Democrats want to talk about that, too, I would assume, especially if things turn, as you're suggesting they might. Heaven forbid you have an issues-driven campaign.
Well, like I said, the Democrats are good for ignoring the low-hanging fruit. They do have the medical the medical side, and they do have those jobs reports. Both of those are pretty good right now. That's what you run on for the time being if things other things get better. But if it becomes them screaming, that what happened 2 years ago is the main thing, Republicans are in big trouble. Let's take a break. When we come back, sure. I want to get into you've always said it's not the main crime, it's the cover-up. And my God, there are actually some serious charges that could be coming down the line here against a bunch of people, whether it's tearing up documents or trying to get fake electors. We'll talk about that when we do return. Jeff Stein is joining us on a Wednesday, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thank you very much to Todd Colet, who's sponsoring AM 950 all this week. You can, too. If you'd like more information, 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885. Todd wants to make sure he mentioned, go to fairfight.com. That's fairfight.com. Make sure every vote is counted this election cycle by going over and joining fairfight.com. Jeff Stein joining us with his usual weekly visit. Jeff, you've often said it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. And boy, oh boy. We're getting a great lesson in that because the National Archives, you first discover. I'm a little missing something here. You can fill me in if I think I've got it here. It sounds like Trump had ripped up a bunch of documents and stuff that was supposed to be saved during his White House stay to prevent from those things going to the National Archives as ripped up documents, which I can't imagine was a piece, made them very happy. They stashed them down at Mar-a-Lago, but did tell people we've got them down here. Now the National Archives has come back and said we need them. They get them. They're all just boxes of torn up documents. And now they have actually referred to the Department of Justice for destruction of official documents, which, once again, not sexy, but it's got teeth. And when you open up a box from Trump and it's, hamburger grease stained, ripped up pieces of paper, it's pretty easy to say, well, that does seem like destruction of property to me.
Okay, the Big Mac wrappers were intact. All right, so let's start with that. Now, during the presidency, there were many reports that Trump had a habit of making notes at a meeting. And then he would rip up the notes in tiny little pieces. Now, many people know that there is a strategy that if you take notes as someone is talking, you remember it better. It's not that you're going to retain those pieces of paper. And frankly, I've tried, and it's true. If you just sit and listen to somebody talk, you retain a certain amount. But if you actually go through the process of taking notes, you retain it better. Well, he had this habit of ripping things up, and it was partly a nervous habit also. They had to get on him and say, no, you're now the president. You can, every piece of paper belongs to the government. It has to go to the archives, et cetera, et cetera. And they played all sorts of heck trying to get him to not rip things up. That's over here. How much of this is people scooping that kind of stuff up and getting it out of there with the thought that somebody who bought stock in the Scotch Tape Company was going to reassemble it? Don't know. How much of it was, let's spirit things out of the White House in the dead of night to cover up our tracks and just say that it showed up with, the president's neckties and belts when we moved things? Don't know. How much of it was, He used that as the Southern White House, and there were documents down there that just weren't returned to Washington.
Sure.
We don't know enough just yet, but the concept that there are packing boxes full of, in essence, confetti, that's not a good look, without any question. Now, again, I mentioned the stuff that had been reported during the presidency because that was an issue that was mentioned. So it may be nothing more than, I'm the president, you can't tell me what to do, and so I'm going to rip this stuff up, and people kept it. But then why do you send it to Mar-a-Lago? Why not make it the National Archives problem?
Well, and once again, it's like the emulence clause. I mean, yeah, you could, you know, they violated it, and you could basically hold them accountable. It's the archives doing this, I think, is actually going to cause the Trump, you know, family more problems than they think. The other issue here is something that's also come to light. Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, the rest of that idiot legal team, they were the ones, it sounds like, were behind the fake electors. We're trying to, in Michigan, trying to confiscate a county's, voting machines. There's a lot of Republicans who are like, I'm not going to go to jail for you guys. And they're starting to come out and talk.
Your bigger issue came out as you've been on the air, and that is that Peter Navarro has been subpoenaed.
Ah.
Okay. Now, Navarro, of course, is the one who boasted in his recent book, The Green Bay Sweep, his plan to have Pence remand votes to states. I mean, he laid it all out there, and so now they want Peter Navarro to testify.
Ooh.
Because he was very clear about all of this. Now, well, Peter Navarro has not been shy.
I sure love when people plead the fifth. Jeff Stein, once again, I'll post the Iowa Politics Report. Hour two is coming up next.